We're really glad that you are here today, and if you are stuck here because of, you know, your family is coming to you, or and you can't get to some cooler, higher ground somewhere, it'll be okay. We seem to survive the 4th of July every year, and hopefully yours will be a good one. We started a study a few weeks ago, looking at different characters in the Old Testament, and more than just looking at characters, we are looking at character. What we see coming out of the lives of some of these people in the Old Testament. And so if you have your Bible, you can open up to Genesis chapter 12. We're not going to follow along up here. There's too much to read and too much to put up on the screen today, at least this part of it. But it's in chapter 12 of Genesis. It's one of the early stories that we learn as followers of Christ. Sometimes we don't understand the story completely, but it makes sense to me, I'll tell you that, after a lot of years. And in chapter 12, it's the story of what we would say, or who we would call Abraham and Sarah. But this is a part of their story before their names have been changed. A little later on in their lives, God changed their names to Abraham and Sarah, because earlier they were just Abram and Sarai. Those were their names originally. And this is their story. Verse 1 in chapter 12. Now the Lord said to Abram, "Go forth from your country, from your relatives, and from your father's house, to the land which I will show you, and I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you, and make your name great, and so you will be a blessing, and I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you I will curse, and in you all the families of the earth will be blessed." This is what we call, in the study of Scripture, this is the first great promise or the first great covenant that God made with humanity. He certainly made one with Adam and Eve earlier, but this is one that marks the beginning of a change in how God operates with people. It says, "So Abram went forward as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. Now Abram was 75 years old." He's 75 and he's starting out on a journey. My goodness, I love this part of the story. "When he departed from Haran, Abram took Sarah his wife and Lot his nephew and all their possessions which they had accumulated and the persons which they had acquired in Haran and set out for the land of Canaan. And they went and went." I'm going to skip some verses here. You know how that goes when you read the Old Testament. "To the Lord, the Lord appeared to Abram and said, 'To your descendants I will give this land.' So he built an altar there to the Lord who had appeared to him." They went on further, and Abram built another altar. It's recorded in this story. So, at least this part of it, I want you to kind of grasp what's going on. And there's just not a lot of details in this story, so I think a lot of it is left to imagination of exactly what it looked like and how it unfolded. But God told Abram to leave his home and his people and his household, and he gathered the ones up that he had, and God makes huge promises to Abram that he will be the father of a great nation, and that people from then on, even down to us, thousands of years later, we would be blessed. All people would be blessed through Abram and his faith and what he did. And so he left with Sarai and Lot, his nephew, and all the possessions. And they set out for Canaan, which was later we find out that that's a promised land. That was the land that he had prepared for his people to grow up in, and they arrived there. And it appears that they had been doing exactly what God had told them to do. He had left his father's house. He believed in God. He believed God's words. He sets out on this adventure, though he didn't know where he was going. Always, when I read this story again, and this is a story we turn back to all the time in the Bible, and every time now when I read this story, I think of the night, and pardon me for overly personalizing this, but there was a night a little over 23 years ago where my family left behind all of our stuff and our friends and so forth and gathered up our two little boys and some of our belongings and loaded up into our 1982 Dodge shortbed 4x4 pickup truck with a camper on it, and we headed to the promised land. Some of you who know what I'm talking about. We had left California and we just kind of pointed the truck east, going to the land of milk and honey and all things good, just kind of following what we believed to be God's promises for us. And we got about 3 miles outside of San Diego, and Wanda looks at me and goes, "Are you sure we're doing the right thing?" And my answer was, "I don't know. I guess if it blows up, we could always turn the truck around and come back." But you know what? There was this sense of adventure for this young family that we were going somewhere new, and we were going to have to trust God. And God never failed us. I think of the story of Abram. It was a tremendously difficult thing he was asked to do, since he had no idea what the future was going to bring. And when he arrived in the land, it says that he built altars and he bowed and worshipped God when he got there. He worshipped God publicly, sometimes in the face of danger. But he was well on his way, I think, to living his happily ever after life. That is what I see in between the lines of this story. He was well on his way. But then he was put to the test. It always happens. Somewhere along the line, usually early on, our plans, our dreams, whether they are coming from God or just things that we dream up on our own, get tested. It turns out to not be the way we thought it was going to be. This land that was going to be his, where he would have his roots and belong there, it stopped producing enough food. Now, we look at that, it stopped producing enough food, and we go, well, we'll just change from Winco and go down to Walmart. You know, if Winco doesn't have enough food, you know, we in this land of plenty don't relate well to this story, I don't think. This was life and death. This was what felt like, I think, the end of his world. And if Abram was anything like me or like you, we would look at God and go, "What? You brought us here, and then we get this? God, I thought we could trust you." The story continues at verse 10 in chapter 12. "Now there was a famine in the land. So Abram went down to Egypt, for the famine was severe in the land. And it came about, when he came near to Egypt, that he said to Sarai, his wife, 'See now, I know that you are a really beautiful woman. And when the Egyptians see you, they will say, that's his wife?'" That's my emphasis, okay, just for the record. It doesn't say it there, but that's how I picture this story. "You got her? And they will kill me, and they will let you live." This is what he's saying to his own wife. Please say that you are my sister, so that it will go well with me because of you, and that I may live on account of you, on account of you. Came about when Abram came into Egypt, the Egyptians saw that the woman was very beautiful. Pharaoh's officials saw her and praised her to Pharaoh. And the woman was taken into Pharaoh's house. Therefore, he treated Abram well for her sake, gave him sheep and donkeys and oxen and male and female servants and female donkeys and camels. Look, it was 5,000 years ago, but that was a big deal. But the Lord struck Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. Then Pharaoh called Abram and said, "What is this you have done to me? Why did you not tell me that she was your wife? Why did you say she's my sister, so that I took her for my wife? Now then, here is your wife. Take her and go." Pharaoh commanded his men concerning him, and they escorted him away with his wife and all that belonged to him. Whoa. You talk about messing up a life. You talk about messing up this wonderful thing that God has given you, taking it into your own hands. There was a famine, and life became way more difficult than he expected. Always does. And what's interesting here is there is no record in this story. Now, granted, the story is short. There have got to be some details that are missing. But one of the details that's missing, I think, is missing on purpose, and that is there is no record of Abram asking God for help in that moment. There's no record of that. All there is a record of Abram taking matters into his own hands and doing it his own way. The test came. He should have sought guidance. Instead, he used his own best judgment and left for Egypt. Can I just ask you for a second to make this really personal for you? Because I did it all week long in my life. You should have to suffer. Okay? I want you to think of a few moments in your life, maybe one that happened this week, maybe this morning, where you decided that in your best judgment, something was a really good thing to do, even though it went contrary to what God had designed for your life. Just so we can all be in the same pot together here. None of us are any different from each other. It was at that moment that Abram proceeded to do everything wrong. One step after another. Acted directly opposite of God's plan. He threatened his future family. He threatened the nation that would come from him. My goodness, he even threatened us in that moment, because we are people who are blessed because of Abram. You can almost hear the disgust in the Pharaoh's voice when he said, "Take your wife and get out of here. Just leave. I do not want you around anymore. All you and your God and your whatever you say, all it's doing is messing up my country and messing up my life." Abram's name was given no value and no worth. He was given dishonor because of his deception. Instead of being a blessing to other people, he brought plagues and curses to the house of Pharaoh, deep distress to his own family, and everything was the exact opposite of what the Lord had promised. And here is why I believe this story is in the Bible. Somewhere, somehow, I don't know how God communicated this, but he made it really clear to Abram, "I am going to make this story right again. I'm going to fix the mess that you have created." Those are some of the greatest words in the Bible. And they are really just implied, because we have to look at the story and how it plays out to know that. It's right here in this story at the beginning of the Bible where we see that nothing is too big for God. God led him back to the land that he never should have left anyway. Now, just for the record, this is not my story to say that I'm going back to California. Okay, that's not how this story ends. I have reached the promised land. I understand. The story in the Bible continues. Just these few verses. It's in chapter 13. I want you to look at them up on the screen. So Abram went from Egypt to the Negev with his wife and everything he had, and Lot went with him, meaning they went back to where they came from. Abram had become very wealthy in livestock and in silver and gold. God still gave him a bunch of stuff. Doesn't that really get you sometimes, where you know that you don't deserve in any way all of these great things that God continues to do, even though he knows the mess that you are making of your own life? That's the story. That's what's happening right here. He went from the Negev, he went from place to place until he came to Bethel, to the place between Bethel and Ai, where his tent had been earlier and where he had first built an altar. And there Abram called on the name of the Lord. God led Abram and his family back to an altar. Back to this spot that had meaning. There are many things in the Old Testament that altars represent. We kind of looked at them a few weeks ago, but one of the things that altars did in the Old Testament, and even continue to do now, is that altars are memorials where we can be reminded of earlier decisions and earlier promises, earlier moments in our lives that mark God's intervention into our world, and we need to remember those. I brought something in. I brought a couple of things in today. This is a little playhouse that my family built years and years and years ago. It's kind of broken down, and the stucco has come off the side on one of the sides, and the roof leaks, and all of those things, but we built this. I used to work for a mission organization years ago that took kids, just like we did at North Point for many years, down into Mexico to build houses that look just like this for the poor in Mexico. It's strange. The house actually looks like this, pretty much. It's just a little 11 by 22 foot house. Not much in it. It has a cement floor and stucco on the sides and some roll roofing on the top, and not much to it. But it looks like a castle compared to what they were living in. And that was what we did. And, for years here we did that. Well, when I first started to work for this organization, one of the things that I did is that as a family, we built this little house. And we always had it in our house to remember again God's blessing. Because this little house that a family of 10 would live in was certainly not much bigger, usually smaller, than the garage that I had at my house that had all my stuff in it. This little house that we had in our house for years was an altar. It was an altar that we had to return to regularly when we got too big for our britches as a family, when we thought that we were in control of everything. We had to remember that we were in control of nothing except our relationship with God. that we could turn to daily. This was an altar. We didn't bow to this altar, but we walked by it regularly. It was as much a part of our house that we lived in as any other part of it. This was an extension of who we were. There's another altar that I go to regularly. Now, I go to altars partly because I think I just forget things. And I need them. I need reminders of the places in my life where God showed up to prove that He was God and He always would be God. I have an envelope. Okay? It's kind of wrinkled. I keep it that way. And inside this envelope, I have this kind of stored in a place where, honestly, nobody knows where it is in my house. I don't even... Wanda probably knows. I don't ask. She doesn't tell. But inside the envelope, there are 10 $1 bills. Hopefully my kids didn't steal one some year when I wasn't looking. 10 $1 bills. This is an altar in my life that I remember all the time. I actually take this out periodically and hold it and walk around with it. There's a point in time, it kind of coincided with this a little earlier, when we made a decision as a family to become missionaries, which was to kind of leave the world of a regular paycheck, even though the church was still a regular paycheck for me, and to begin the journey of raising our financial support so that we could work in Mexico. And this envelope, I got, it was just in the church that we were attending at that time, and I was on the staff, it was a dear little old couple who were in their 90s. And Mr. Ferguson, it's even, his name is still on there, Earl P. Ferguson, right there. Huntington Beach, California. And he came up to me and he handed me this envelope. And he said, "Here, this is for you and your wife. I know that you're going to go be missionaries." And I opened it up and it was $10. 10 $1 bills. I was young at the time and not... I was immature. And I looked inside and my first response when I saw the $10 was, "God, have you old people lost your mind? What do you think $10 is going to do? I've got a family. We've got to move. We have to travel. We have to..." And it was at that moment that God used this $10 to bring a whole new, fresh perspective on money to me. Is that this $10 has reminded me for years and years and years that God will never, ever fail me. Ever. I never spent the $10. I could never figure out how to spend it. So I kept it. And it became a memorial. It became an altar. It became a constant reminder to me to put my own money in the offering plate. Always. Because that's how God takes care of His own. It's how God takes care of His own business. It's by good-hearted people who give $10 or $20 or $100 or $1,000, depending on what they have. I've never let go of that. I carry around with me every day, most every day, another altar. Some of you carry around the same altar, by the way. I wear it on this finger. Okay? It's a memorial. It's a reminder to me of the moment that God showed up in the union of two little young smart aleck know-it-all 20-year-olds who thought that they had the world by the tail and had every answer to everything. That wasn't both of us. I just did enough of that to cover Wanda too. But my ring is a constant reminder that my marriage has three parts and not two. Yeah, I went through a civil ceremony and some guy wrote on my marriage certificate that I was married. I did that for you guys, huh? Nah. I just showed up. Somebody did that for you. Somebody did that for you and for you and for you. For you. But God is the one who makes us married. That's who our promises are to, secondarily to each other, because God is the keeper of His promises. He will always keep His promises. I don't know about you, but I need to be reminded of God's promises regularly because I am subject to forgetting them all of the time. I imagine you are likewise. So that's where this story gets really, really personal. Even though it was 5,000 or 6,000 years ago. What do you do? What do you do in your life when you realize that you have moved out of obedience and into disobedience and sin before God? What do you do when that happens? What do you do when you've blown it? What do you do when you've wandered? What do you do when you've turned your back on the promises of God? Because we all do. Well, remember this story out of Genesis chapter 12. Read it again and again and again and again. What you do when you wander away from the promises of God is you wander back. It's not real difficult. It's not real complicated. You retrace your steps and you go back to where the promises were made and remember them again. You don't ignore your surroundings. You don't act like something bad hasn't happened, because it certainly has. You got to come to grips with the reality of what you are doing. Can you imagine for a moment that second, that reality check moment when Abram went, "What have I done? I have messed up everything. What have I done?" We all have those moments. So here's what you do. Don't stay there. Don't stay there. Leave. Get out of the mess. Let God lead you out. Let Him lead you back to an altar that was made somewhere along the line. Now look, I have really vivid memories of my altars. It was something that I was taught at an early age, was to make altars so that I could always return back to them when I messed up my life. You have them also. It may take you a little while to remember where they are. It may take some retracing of steps. But I guarantee you, if you are here today, there's an altar somewhere in your past where you believed God's promises, where they made a difference in your life. So go back there. Go back to the altar. Go back to where the memorial was made. It is so important to understand that Abram did not become this awesome, towering man of faith overnight. It was a long journey. He knew as far back as Ur, his land where he came from, that he was to leave his father's house to begin a journey of faith. He knew it. When he arrived in the land of promise, he failed his first test miserably and took off to Egypt. And it took time for him to learn to trust God again. His faith came in stages. He didn't understand everything all at once. Are you starting to feel like Abram's your friend? Like you could hang out with Abram? Yeah, I think we all could. And I think as those of us who have become the inheritors of the promises of Abram, that God made to Abram, we shouldn't be surprised when it is true for us as it was true for Abram. We will fail. We will get lost and confused. It happens. We will choose poorly. We will give in to unwise thinking and bad judgment. That ugly demon of thinking we know everything always lurks around somewhere. We will reject God's love and guidance. So go back. Just go back. It's not real complicated. New Testament calls it repent. I'll just call it go back. Just go back to an altar. Do what Abram did. Certainly good enough for him. It can be good enough for us. Abram returned to where he had once walked really, really well with God. And you and I can do that too. That's what a journey of faith is. And God will always, always bless that. We're going to sing a song right now. After we're done with this song, we're going to all collectively approach an altar that has been made for us. A memorial that was made for us. Jesus, on the night that he was betrayed, says that he gathered his disciples together and they shared a special meal together. And in the middle of that meal, they shared juice and bread. And he said, you know what? Let's make this an altar that you all return to a lot. Come back to it regularly. I'll tell you something. If you don't need any other reason to be part of a church family once a week, just to come and join in once a week, communion is your reason. Is to come back around the memorial, wander back to the altar, take juice and bread, and remember again, God has made promises to you that He will never, ever break. We just have to come back. Come back to the altar.